The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live from Atlanta at the American Legislative Exchange Council annual gathering. The laboratory of the states come together, and it's a policy wonk out. So I wanted to come, and they are great sponsors of our show. So I said, I will come and talk to everyone about every wonky thing you want to talk about and every pressing matter like tax cuts and education reform and unfunded pension liabilities. You go over to alec.org. You can see all the stuff that they do. We'll start that at the bottom of the hour. First, the rundown of the news. Washington Post reporting the Justice Department is investigating President Donald Trump's action as part of its criminal probe of efforts to overturn the 2020 election results. According to four people familiar, they're questioning witnesses before a grand jury, and that's all we know. And here's what I'm here to tell you. Just wait. Just wait. Always just wait. There is no story until there's a story. I think it would be reckless in the extreme to prosecute Donald Trump for the actions of 1-6. His inaction, in other words, it would be unprecedented. And I don't know what law they would proceed under. The Electoral Count Act is subject to interpretation. There was a wrong interpretation, in my view, but not an illegal one, by John Eastman, the old dean at Chapman, with whom I worked for many years, an old friend. And he was wrong on that, but it wasn't a criminal act. And so I think this is all kind of show for the hard left, never Trump crowd. The Defense of Marriage Act repeal is coming before the Senate soon, and it's passed the House. Some of my very best friends in the Christian legal movement, for example, at Alliance Defending Freedom, oppose Republicans signing on to this. I support them doing so. The complicated part is the politics, according to the Washington Post. Actually, it's not. It's the theology. Like other mainline Catholics and Christians, I believe that human intimacy is reserved for a man and a woman inside the bounds of marriage. But the United States supermajority of people don't. Obergefell leapfrogged the constitutional process and slammed down Obergefell in a 5-4 decision. I would have joined the Chief Justice's dissent at the time of the decision. But since that time, unlike after Roe, there has been acquiescence of the states. No efforts to overturn Obergefell. And unlike Roe, enormous reliance. I believe it's 500,000 Americans are in a same-sex marriage. And that number will grow every year. So the idea that Obergefell is going to be challenged in the states is absurd. The idea that the Supreme Court would ever retreat on that is absurd. But people who oppose same-sex marriage should realize that we want the precedence of uncontested decisions like those involving the Free Exercise Clause over the last 10 years to stick in the long term when the left rises up. We want them to have to run into stare decisis and reliance interests. And by codifying Obergefell, they might want to add an amendment to codify Trinity Lutheran and the Hobby Lobby decisions, et cetera, but they should vote for it. Wall Street Journal reports this morning, Facebook parent Meta Platforms is expected to post its biggest drop in daily users and its first decline ever in revenue as the company struggles to adjust to macroeconomic forces and growing competition from rival TikTok. And by the way, on the advertising front, Google's draining away their money, so is Amazon. Better bets than Facebook. Fox News, during the White House press briefing, the National Economic Council director argued that the U.S. is not on the brink of a recession and that the 9.1% inflation rate could be a lot worse. He said, we're not facing famine, for example. That's a great relief, I'm sure you all know. In the Telegraph, there is a story on the Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss debate yesterday, which ended when Kate McCann, the moderator, fainted. Now, their moderators stand at the debates that I have done, both in 2016 and this past year in Ohio for the Senate, in Minnesota for the governorship, in Arizona for the state Senate, for the United States Senate and the governorship. I sit. I don't want to lock my knees and faint. I've seen choir members go down doing that, and that's what happened. She's fine. The debate was 30 minutes, but the war goes on over there. Liz Truss has got the high ground. She's for cutting taxes and regulations. Rishi Sunak last night said, me too. I'm going to cut taxes too. Too late, Rishi. Inflation. Unilever, Coca-Cola, and McDonald's laid bare the impact of global inflation yesterday, telling their shareholders and the media that they're going to be passing along those costs into every single product. Germany is rethinking its exit from the nuclear power stage, according to the Telegraph. What a surprise. Their U-turn on nuclear power comes as Russia cuts off 4/5 of their gas. It's going to be a long, dark, cold winter. And we better, look, if you don't want to be cold in the winter and roasting in the summer, you better get a bunch of nuclear power plants built in your country, the new ones, the good ones, including the United States. General Motors' net profit tumbled 40% in the last quarter, back to the Wall Street Journal. That's because nobody wants to pay top dollar for new vehicles, even though they do. Certainly, people demand has cratered because of the recession that isn't a recession, but we'll talk about that more. Low-cost cities with strong economies remain attractive as housing market slows. This will be great news to AndrewandTodd.com, one of our great sponsors who will lend you money to buy a house in any of these places. If you qualify, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172, AndrewandTodd.com. Listen, I want to read you down where they're going to the number one city for emerging housing markets yesterday, Elkhart, Goshen in Indiana. Number two, Burlington, North Carolina. Number three, Johnson City, Tennessee. Number four, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Indiana doing very well in this study. Number five, Billings, Montana. It comes with a snow shovel from Andrew and Todd when you buy a house there. Raleigh, North Carolina, kind of makes sense to me. That's number six. Rapid City, South Dakota is number seven. It fell a little bit in the rankings over a year, but still that people are moving to Rapid City because it's affordable. Northport, Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida is in eighth place. Again, we're talking about low-cost states, low-tax states. Number nine, Topeka, Kansas. Topeka, Kansas. And rounding out the top 10, improbably, Visalia, Porterville. Dwayne is looking at me like, Visalia, Porterville? Yeah. You ever been to Visalia? I'm not sure that that would be my recommendation to anyone moving out of state.
Yeah, for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. I got to tell you now, finally, last story of the morning, New York Times, Pete Werner. Says, what in the world happened to Elise Stefanik? Whenever you see one of those headlines, what in the world happened to, it's a hit piece. I've been the subject of lots of what in the world happened to Hugh Hewitt. When someone disagrees with you, they suggest that you've changed, when in fact, they changed. Right? So that's what you got to understand. Pete Wehner has changed, not Elise Stefanik. Elise Stefanik is a Republican leader who is leading a different kind of Republican party that Pete Wehner had a big role in. Pete's a friend of mine, but those kinds of pieces are hit pieces. And mostly it's Pete's upset about the attack on the 1-6 committee. Donald Trump and Mike Pence both gave speeches yesterday. They are likely to be chairing off against each other in the debates of 2015. Here is President Trump talking about China, cut number two.
We need to establish a commission to hold China accountable for unleashing the virus upon the world and the damage they've caused. And we need to restore my administration's initiative to target and eliminate Chinese espionage, which Joe Biden outrageously abolished. You know, we had it. Huawei couldn't come in. You know that they were prohibited from coming in. All of a sudden, they were all over the place.
And then the former president added this, cut number three.
If I renounced my beliefs, if I agreed to stay silent, if I stayed at home and just took it easy, the persecution of Donald Trump would stop immediately. It would stop. But that's not what I will do. I can't do that.
All right. So what's that tell you? What I've told you all along, he's running and he's the front runner. Cut number four is going to be a central feature of this campaign. Cut number four.
And by the way, we should not allow men to play in women's sports.
All right. It's an applause line. That's a supermajority line. Democrats hate that. Republicans love that. It's going to continue. Last cut from Donald Trump. I'll do some Pence cuts after the break. Cut number five.
Finally, to secure our country, we have to secure our borders. And there's never been anything like what's taking place at our border. Our open borders are a gaping wound allowing drugs, gangs, child traffickers, human smugglers, and tens of thousands of dangerous criminals to pour into our country. That's every week when you hear tens of, that's every week.
So that's the former president yesterday, the former vice president speaking at the Young Americans for Freedom Conference yesterday. I'll play some clips of that right after the break from Atlanta. Then I'm going to start talking policy with the ALEC folk, American Legislative Exchange Council.org. If you want to see what I'm doing, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt live in Atlanta from the American Legislative Exchange Council. And I could do Old Home Week with the CEO of ALEC.org, Lisa Nelson, who I have never met, but I feel like I know because our Venn diagram is pretty complete, Lisa Nelson, whether it is the Reagan years or the National Review colleagues that we share in common. But that's not why you're here. So I'm going to go right to the heart of it. We could really do a parade of, she's much younger than I am, but she was a kid when I was an aging 35-year-old in D.C. But we're here to talk about ALEC, Lisa Nelson, because you now shepherd one of the country's most important policy organizations. Would you tell people about the American Legislative Exchange Council and explain how a Berkeley graduate ended up running ALEC?
Absolutely, Hugh. Thank you so much for having me on. I would love to spend a couple of hours with you just sharing notes, but happy to be here this morning and happy to be in Atlanta, Georgia for our 49th annual ALEC annual meeting. ALEC essentially is a consortium of state legislators from all over the country that get together and work alongside with employers and business owners, small business owners, large business owners, stakeholders in policy. And what we do is we develop and work on model policy that focuses on the size of government, limited government, free markets, and federalism, which is essentially pushing power back to the states.
So when people learn that you worked for Bill Buckley and you worked for Newt Gingrich, it kind of, the planets align. And then you went into the private sector, so you worked for businesses who have to deal with the government, and then you came back to head ALEC. 49 years is the key thing that you said there. ALEC is not new. ALEC has been doing this forever. And the mission is what? How would you say what the mission is?
Well, our mission is to help all Americans and to create policy solutions that help all Americans. And whether that's in their business enterprises, with small businesses owners or in education to make sure that their education for their children is proper, their health care to make sure that they've got proper health care. The mission is to make sure that policy solutions at the state level are factors and solutions that contribute to a better life for them.
Yeah, you know, back in the days when Pete Wilson tricked me onto the California Air Quality Management District, and then Kurt Pringle tricked me into the California Art Council, ALEC started. They take care of state appointees.
Yep.
They would send you briefs, and so if you didn't know what you were doing, I walked into the AQMD with some regulatory background, but not air pollution. ALEC came to my rescue, and so you must have this vast treasure trove. I know you've got a board of directors, a board of scholars, but you must have policy wonks stuck into every corner.
We absolutely do. And after 40, something was happening in the water 50 years ago because, the Heritage Foundation was started 50 years, 49 years ago. Pacific Legal was started back then. And what we do is we create policy solutions, white papers, briefings for legislators, for county officials, for state and local officials that would offer them a roadmap. And some of it looks like a model policy that they might introduce in their legislation. I kind of liken it to a library shelf. We probably have over 900 policies sitting on the shelf that if you're a legislator and you want to pursue something in your state, you can pull that, pull that policy off the shelf, modify it so it fits and works with your state. But it gives you the guide rails if you believe in those principles of limited government and free markets.
The most important issue in America today is education reform of government-run schools. Arizona has done a bold thing. Ohio is in line to do it. Texas is thinking about doing it. Have you done a model code for people who want to do backpack funding?
Absolutely. It's Patricia Ruckers from West Virginia. She's the senator from West Virginia, and she developed a Hope Scholarship bill in West Virginia. She worked on it for about 3 years, making sure that she could bring together all of the interested parties, because that's part of the problem, as there's so many different people working on education and working in choice, the homeschoolers, the charter schools, the parochial schools, and then, of course, the public schools.
Now, Lisa, you're a parent. I'm a parent. My kids went to public school in California, all three of them. They've all moved to Virginia. Fetchy, Mrs. Hewitt, and I have moved to Virginia. You're a Virginian. Glenn Youngkin and I spent a conversation in front of some conservatives last week, and I'm doing it again on education. People who call Alec, do you keep track of how many calls are coming in on education because the system is so badly broken?
Yeah, I mean, they're calling the 2021 and 2022 the year of education, right? And so much is happening. I literally was just with Ben Thoma, the legislator, last night here in the hotel, who was the person that led the education, universal education bill in Arizona. So people are calling us and talking to us about what that solution is. When you have a model policy, it makes the job that much easier, because within the ALEC structure, those policies have been vetted. Everybody has looked at it and kind of thought about what are the unintended consequences, what is going to happen around this. We want to support public schools, but we also want to make sure that parents have a choice for their child.
I'm sitting here thinking, this woman is so accomplished and you've done so much. Are you sitting on other boards? Is like every corporate board in America want Lisa Nelson to come and join it?
I hope so.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, given your corporate experience, and which companies do you work for? AOL?
I worked for AOL and then AOL Time Warner and then Time Warner as it manifested itself. And then Visa, the credit card company.
So all through that private sector, and you chose to work for ALEC. You must believe, like I do, that the states are where it is at.
I love what I am doing, working with state legislators across the country. These are the true heroes and real Americans who understand what's going on. There's something happening out there in the country right now, and people are waking up to the issues. I think when you see the crime on the streets, what's happening at the borders, what's happening in your education, you can't help but want to get involved and start to kind of take back the country.
Now, so everyone listening can go to ALEC.org, ALEC. For the Steelers fans out there, it's not ALEX, it's ALEC.org, ALEC.org. Download Rich State, Poor State, which is critical. Download fact-based unfunded pension liabilities. I talk about it all the time. People nod out, their cars go off the road. But it matters, right? That is the big iceberg out there.
It is. And I think you're going to have Jonathan Williams on a little bit later in your show. He'll talk all about that. I call him my happy economist. He's absolutely delightful. And, you know, our publications are, you were talking about it earlier, our publications, Rich States, Poor States, has been coming out for 14 years. Utah has been the number one ranked state for 14 years, and we currently have a little battle going on between Utah, Arizona, North Carolina, and Florida, which is exactly what we want. We want that healthy competition among states to be the best run, the most well-run fiscal state in the country.
Now, I go to Maine for the summer, and I was talking to a craftsman, I mean a genuine craftsman yesterday. He's working on something for my wife, who I refer to as the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt on the radio show. And we got to talking about life in Maine and how they need Paul LePage to be elected because they've got to reverse the tax. And I said, or you'll turn into California and people will leave. What do you do about the legislators who are stranded in deep blue states?
Well, we don't forget about them. That's one thing. We actually have held a Northeast Regional Academy in Maine, and Governor LePage, when he was governor in the first time, actually invited us over to his mansion so that we could talk to him about fiscal policies. He loves ALEC and would be absolutely part of our family. But we work with them. These regional academies are small, intimate groups where it's literally like for them going to school. We teach them about zero-based budgeting. We teach them about how to manage their budgets, how to set a budget that isn't a growth budget. We teach them about tax cuts and how they can cut spending and cut taxes at the same time, which is something I don't think the federal government knows how to do. They eat the material up. The minority members in the Northeast and in Maine, actually, we've got delegates from Maine here. I should have them stop by.
And then you convene the Legion.
Yep.
The Legion of Legislators, the Spartans of the legislative world convene once a year. This must be like a relief. How much is just socializing with like-minded center-right conservatives and policy wonks, and how much of it is therapy? Because they're in Democratic states.
Absolutely. It's so funny when we put together these meetings, because we have to create time for that networking and that shared kind of brotherhood, you know, of policy solutions. When we get together, sometimes we have to actually shush the crowd when we have a main speaker, just because they're so happy to be with like-minded people. So we absolutely make sure that there's enough kind of networking so that they can share. That's the beauty of ALEC, is they share what's going on. They'll talk about, you know, this worked in Iowa, but it didn't really work over in Maine, for instance. And once they do that, they can kind of craft a policy that fits for their constituents in their communities.
My closest friend in the world, sadly a Democrat, Mark Guerin, runs the Harvard Kennedy Institute of Politics, and they always get the new congressman in for a couple of weeks of brainwashing at the beginning of their careers. When a new state legislator is elected, what does ALEC do for him or her?
We have a new legislator academy.
I was wondering.
Okay. We do. And we actually get together twice a year. And on the even numbered years, we get together in Washington, D.C. So this December, it's actually November 30th to December 2nd, we will be in Washington, D.C. And part of that meeting, it's called the States and Nations Policy Summit. So we bring together governors and legislators. But part of that meeting is a 1.5-day new legislator academy. And we will invite over 50 newly elected legislators. In fact, we're already identifying them now. A lot of states where they might be in a post-primary, where the primary is actually the general, in a 70% district, so they're likely to get elected in November. We're identifying those legislators, and we'll bring them in, and we will literally immerse them in our policies. And, you know, it's education. It literally...
Do you recommend that they specialize or that they stay utility infielders? Do you recommend, okay, if your passion is taxes, do this. If your passion is pensions, do that. If your passion is social issues, do this. Or do you want them to be all-purpose legislators?
You know, I that's such a great question. We have legislators of all stripes. And I would say a couple of examples. We had a legislator from Wisconsin who was a nurse practitioner. And she came to ALEC and she said, you know, I want to be on the HHS task force. I want to work within my field. And then we had a lady who came in for education. She said, you know, I know nothing about tax and budget. Can I sit on the task force that talks about taxes and budgets? And she ended up being the chairman of that task force after 8 years, Gail Bates out of Maryland. So, you know, it takes all kinds. And I would say utility players are great, because then they can engage on the issues when they get back to their state capitals.
Well, ALEC is important. People need to know about it. I'm so glad to be here. Lisa Nelson, thank you for getting up early. Your first meeting probably isn't until 9, but you're very early at the ALEC conference to kick off the Hugh Hewitt Show's coverage of it. ALEC.org. If you want to know more about Lisa, her bio is over at ALEC.org. Lisa Nelson, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. I've got something at 6:45, or 7 o'clock. So it's, you know, I'm happy to be here, and I'm glad that you're going to be here all week visiting with our legislators.
All week. Go for it. In fact, I can give you some relief factor if you... I actually can't. I only brought enough for myself. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt at the American Legislative Exchange Council, gathering of all the wonks and state legislators that could possibly make my happiest day, because it is. I love this stuff. Jonathan Williams is the director of policy. Actually, what's your title at ALEC, Jonathan?
Vice President and Chief Economist.
All right. Chief Economist. Now, you're like Brian Westbury. He's my favorite economist. Are we going to be in a recession when the GDP number comes out and it's two successive quarters of negative growth?
Yeah. I mean, as the Biden administration is already trying to walk that back and saying it's not really that definition, I think most Americans already feel the definition.
That's a good way to put it.
Right. I mean, I was talking to an Uber driver on the way here, and my colleague and I in the back seat were talking about this and saying, well, the Biden administration is saying it's more complicated than two straight quarters. And the Uber driver laughed out loud. And so, you know, right there from the Uber driver test that I think Americans realize there's something awry.
Oh, there's much awry. So what are you recommending to your ALEC members that they take home to their state legislators? I like the fact that Rishi Sunak last night changed a U-turn. I pulled a U-turn. I'm for tax cuts, because Liz Truss was winning going away because he's for tax cuts. I couldn't believe he was running on old conservatism, you know, austerity and bring down the prime rate. It's tax cuts. People don't want to pay more of these taxes, right?
Hear, hear. And that's exactly the solution from the states. It's the Reagan-esque message of a supply-side response. I mean, there's the painful response, which is going to be the Federal Reserve announcement here with additional rate increases that probably were long overdue, given the free money that had existed for so long in the economy. But then what we need is the state pushback to what we're seeing from the Biden White House and from the progressives in D.C. is that states are taking the lead in cutting taxes. I mean, we believe in this concept of federalism, right? You talk about it all the time. It's in the ALEC logo as one of our three guiding principles. And states are doing that. In fact, we saw a historic session this year, Hugh, on state tax cuts, where we saw four new states become flat tax states that went away
Arizona,
from the progressive system
right?
to flat. Exactly.
Who else did it?
Arizona was one of the big ones. They have a 2.5% flat tax, the lowest of any state that has an income tax now. But then we saw right here in Georgia became a flat tax state. We saw Mississippi with our Speaker of the House, ALEC board member Philip Gunn, a little bit later. And then we saw Iowa, which one of the most dramatic tax cuts, which was amazing. They went from a rate of over 8% to now under 4% was fully phased in. And Governor Kim Reynolds, an ALEC alumnus from her time in the Iowa Senate, gave the response, of course, to the President's State of the Union just hours after she signed that into law.
John, but the property taxes in New York, I drove to Chautauqua not a month ago and talked to people living there. Property taxes are making them sell homes that have been in the generation four or five times because property. What are you recommending? A Prop 13 sort of solution for states? Because otherwise they'll just keep raising the property taxes.
It's a huge problem, right? All taxes matter and property taxes are very acutely felt because people generally, you know, cut a big check a couple of times a year and they realize the size of government. And, you know, one of the big things they need to do is look at spending because generally property taxes are driven by local governments and they're overspending. And so putting some sort of a spending cap on local governments like Colorado's Tabor, for instance, their Taxpayers' Bill of Rights in the state constitution now for 30 years has been incredibly effective at keeping property taxes down, or something in rich states, poor states, as you've been talking about our book on competitiveness. Utah's ranked number one for 15 years in a row. One of the things that they've had on the books since 1985 is what they call truth in taxation, which is a phenomenal way to address property taxes. It just says, be honest about the fact of why property taxes are going up. Is it assessments? Is it rates? Who's driving it? And actually getting down to the issue of local spending is causing property tax problems.
That's right. Now, I will be amiss if in our 8 minutes I do not ask you. I have talked about public pension unfunded liabilities for as long as I've been on the air, 23rd year. Nobody wants to talk about it because it's too hard, but I call it the iceberg. I think California's going to hit it fairly soon. When do those icebergs begin to hit those ships that are the states?
Well, that's a great question. It's something we've spent a lot of time thinking and writing about. You saw our new report, over $8 trillion in unfunded liabilities now. And then the other hidden debt, like the OPEB healthcare liabilities and bonded debt, gets you to $10 trillion in the states. And so I think, you know, part of that is probably when these market returns, like we've all seen our 401ks become 201ks recently. Do you think states are different than that, right? I mean, they're facing that right now. And so I think, you know, some of this is we need better accounting at the state level because, as you know well, they don't use real private sector accounting. And so they're able to mask some of these issues. But I think getting to the heart of it that way is going to really, because of your work, because of the work of ALEC and uncovering these numbers, people are paying attention because what are these? These are future tax increases ready to happen in these states over time.
The private sector equivalent was GM's pension burden. And it became that GM was a pension company that made cars to support their pensions.
Indeed.
California is now a pension paying state that employs people in order to pay retired public employees. What are the other danger zones? California, Illinois, Connecticut. Which other ones are in danger?
Well, certainly New Jersey. They're always on the top of the list. And then some Republican-leaning states like Kentucky's had some big problems over time. But I'll tell you one thing that nobody talks about is the politics that are being played in these pension investment decisions, such as, let's say, divesting away from oil and gas or gun manufacturers or any interests that liberal state capitals don't like. That's a big and growing problem.
ESC equals going bankrupt in a hurry. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me. ALEC is so important. Go to AmericanLegislativeExchangeCouncil.org, ALEC.org. Come right back. If you're not watching us on the Salem News Channel, you should be. I'll be right back. Hour number two of day number one at ALEC on The Hugh Hewitt Show. watching on the Salem News Channel app today because I am in Hotlanta. Atlanta's not hot yet. It's early here in Atlanta. But Generalissimo and I came here because the American Legislative Exchange Council is gathered here. My guest this segment is Karen Fann. Senator Fann is the leader of the Arizona Senate, the first female Senate president in the history of Arizona. And it's so good to see you, Karen. I go to Arizona a lot, and Kathy Herod and the gang over at CAP are my pals. I think Doug Ducey's the best governor in America. I know you got big elections next week, right?
Yes,
I'm surprised you're here, actually.
Well, I'm taking a little break, so I'm not running. So I'm here to take care of business here, and I'll be right back there to help everybody win in November.
Well, I want to ask you one thing, and really one thing only. The education bill that you passed is a revolution, and it could change everything in America. Will you tell people about what it does, how it works, how the left is pushing back? Just tell us it all, because people need, this is the most important thing that happened in a policy level in America this year.
Thank you. Well, what we call it is the Universal Empowerment Scholarships. That means 100% of all education money will follow the student. This is about parental choice. This is about parents deciding what's best for their kids. And, you know, we understand that there are a lot of really great options out there. Some people have great public schools. I have great public schools in my area, up in Prescott. But some other areas not so good. Other people need special needs schools. Other people have kids that excel, and they shouldn't be kept back in class, and they should be able to go to a school that can keep up with their learning experiences. It's just such a wide variety of the opportunities and the options out there. Parents should decide.
Now, the funding is now going to follow the student.
That's correct.
How much per student?
We're at about $14,000 per student right now. We also just added another $1 billion to education. So next year that will go up. And we hope to see that ever increasing. We want to make sure, remember, it's not the money that buys the education. It's the quality of the education that is delivered. So there is a balance between adequate and proper amount of funding and making sure that our teachers are doing the best job they can.
So what happens when a student who, say, was at Emerson Primary School somewhere in Tucson and they decide to go to Sacred Heart Catholic School? What happens?
They can do that. They will
Sacred
enroll
Heart
in
get
Sacred
$14,000?
Yep, the school gets the money. The money follows the student. And why not? The pushback that we're getting is, oh, that's taxpayer dollar. You're taking taxpayer dollars to fund private schools or charter schools. Well, first of all, or they say public monies. I'm sorry. They always say it's public monies. First of all, it's not public monies. It's taxpayer monies. These are your monies that you paid in. Why should you pay in for education and then have to force yourself to have kids go to a failing school? How fair is that? It's not. Healthy competition always brings out the best. And the fact that when they keep saying that, oh, this is just more money for the rich people, that's not true. Rich people have money, so they can afford to send their kids wherever. What this is really about is the single parent that has the two little girls going to a failing school, trying to make ends meet. And she has no option but to keep that kid in the failing school.
I love Governor Ducey's line that for years Democrats fought to keep black children out of public schools. Now Democrats are fighting all over the country to keep minority children locked in government schools.
Absolutely.
And you are trying to get them out to go. And I think it will lift all boats, actually. But the state teachers union, of course, fighting back. And they're going to put this on the ballot. Are they going to try and trick people on the voting language, or is it just going to be a straight up or down on the backpack bill?
I think that it'll be mostly straight up or down, but they will try and trick the voters with as many things that go on the ballot as they will tell half truths. They will use the arguments we just talked about. Oh, you're taking money away from here. Instead of owning up to their own responsibility and saying, we're the public schools, we're not doing a very good job in some of our areas, and we haven't been for decades. So instead of owning up and saying we can do a better job, instead, what they want to do is, as you said, they want to pull everybody else down to that level instead of lifting all votes.
What is the early indication of the success of the bill? Are people signing up to move to private schools and homeschoolers and everybody else know how to do it?
They do. And we have online, a lot of online instructions. And a lot of that was because of COVID, right? We actually have a lot of students that are being homeschooled right now because when some of the schools in the downtown Phoenix and Tucson area, and they started shutting down. And quite honestly, that remote teaching just doesn't work very well.
No, it doesn't. I've got three grandchildren who are education age and two infants, and I want them in good public schools or good private. I want them in a good school. I don't really care. I'm an agnostic on where they go. I just want them to go where they're going to learn. So in terms of a homeschooling parent, what will happen to them? They previously bore the cost of that education entirely on themselves. Will they get a check for $14,000?
Yes, they will. The money follows the student. Now, obviously, we have guardrails on it that shows that there's accountability, that this is what the money goes for, whether it's school supplies, whether it's extra tutoring. So there are guardrails so that there is accountability, so they can't just take the check and put it in their pocket and not use it for the purpose. But yes.
Let me predict. They're going to either set up or fine a negligent parent who takes their check and blows it on a car and drugs. And then they're going to say that this represent. I don't think that will fool the people of Arizona. Do you?
No, I don't think so. And is there a bad parent out there? Yes, I'm sure there is. We see it in all of the social service programs out there. So it's already happening. So they can't very well say, oh, this is really bad, but they're going to turn a blind eye to those abuses that were happening in other. It's not to say that we want to see any more abuses. It's to say that just if there's a bad apple, that doesn't mean the other 99% are doing a great job and a better job than the public school system did.
So are teachers in the public school or government schools, as some people like to call them, being laid off in anticipation of declining enrollment this year? Or is it really a kind of evolutionary thing?
Oh, I'm hopefully it's evolutionary. And the reason being is there's such a shortage of teachers. Teachers are leaving the field hands over fist. You know, and ironically, a lot of the things that they say is, oh, it's the pay, it's the pay. Recent surveys have showed it pay is second. You know what is first? First is the behavior of the kids, the behavior of the teachers, the behavior of administration. They just consistently say, we don't feel respected anymore. We have no control of our classes anymore because the kids are running the show. And when we call the parents and ask them to help us, put a hand on their kids and say, you need to pay attention. You need to be respectful. And the parents don't do anything.
Yeah, this is so revolutionary. It could change all of America. Dr. Kissinger has a new book. He's 99 years old. I had him on last week. His conclusion is about we have to save public education. We have to save educate. We have to teach kids to read and get them off of the image-based education because that's emotional education. So I think it's a revolutionary moment in Arizona. What did the bill pass by in the Senate and the House? What was the margin?
It was party line. And in Arizona this last year, we had a one-person margin, 31-29 and 16-14. And we passed it.
Wow.
One person margins in both chambers.
Now, the public employee unions there are very vociferous. Were they doing what they did in Wisconsin, flooding the zone with red T-shirts and all that kind of stuff like they did?
They did not this year, but they did a few years ago what they call the Red for Ed and Save Our Students. They marched on the Capitol, and that was for demanding more funding. And I must say that was like 5 years ago when I was still over in the House. But this year there was a handful. And ironically, when we passed it was our last day of sine die. And that was the day that SCOTUS announced the Dobbs decision. And so quite honestly, the few that were there for the school issue were drowned out by the 8,000 people that showed up and started breaking our women's and breaking down our windows and breaking down our doors because they were mad at the SCOTUS decision. So as we're trying to pass this ESA bill, the police are shooting off tear gas canisters outside of our building.
You got it done, Senator.
We got it done.
hey, congratulations to you. Doug Ducey signed it into the House and to Kathy and every group that was behind you. Now I know other states are interested. Are you like the most popular person at the American Legislative Exchange Council? They want to know what the bill looks like. They want to know how it works.
Yes. And that's one of the best things about ALEC, right? I mean, there's so many great things. But one of those is the model legislation that we work with. making sure that we have tried and true things that happen in each state, and particularly with interstate commerce, that we're able to use that model legislation to move it across borders.
Anyone sued yet? Because they'll lose on an establishment theory. They'll lose. It's completely consistent with the existing law with this new Supreme Court. But has anyone challenged the new school funding law?
They are. And in November, it goes to the ballot.
We will be with you. Come back and talk to me about it. Senator, great to have you on the program. Congratulations. You changed the country.
Thank you. You really did.
I'll be right back from Atlanta, America. Don't go anywhere. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The American Legislative Exchange Council series goes on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt in Atlanta. I'm about to bring the boom, 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 because Florida is like the Guardians minor league pitching system. We just turn out Cy Young winner after Cy Young winner. And Shane Bieber's our latest. We got Tristan McKenzie now. They just keep turning them out. And Florida keeps turning out these nationally significant politicians. You got Rick Scott and Marco Rubio in the Senate. You got Ron DeSantis, who had been in the House. Michael Waltz, as you know, is a good pal of mine. You got a lot of other people out there. Danny Perez is the next one. He's like I don't want to call state legislators AAA, but it's sort of AAA for national radio shows. But Danny Perez is the Florida speaker designate under their weird system, because everything is different in Florida and everything is better in Florida. Danny Perez, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me, and good morning to all your listeners.
Now, you are 35 years old, so I hate you.
That's fine. I'll take it. I just turned 35, if it makes it any worse.
Yeah, well, if your dad is listening, I am you. And so if he gets out of line, I'll talk to him. Now, give people a little background. Your parents fled Cuba. You were born in New York. You moved to Miami at the age of 6. What was your education like after that?
Yeah, look, when you grow up in a house that loves this country so much, which we can talk about throughout the program, Hugh, but it's crazy to me, the people that are complaining about the capitalistic, democratic, less government policies that the Republicans or that the conservative movement throws out there. Because in my house, that's scripture. You know, we left with absolutely nothing in 1969. My parents left. My mother went to New York. My father went through Spain because he had a passport from an uncle. Came to the United States, and this country gave us everything. And you know what I appreciate about our culture is they're fighters. They didn't want a government handout. Instead, they just wanted an opportunity. And this country gave us that opportunity. And my parents gave me that opportunity. They allowed me to go to school. I was the first one to graduate from a major university, at Florida State University. And then I went to
Loyola. No football, though. That's the sad part.
No good football today, but we're coming back. Coach Norvell has promised
I'm from
me
Ohio.
We're coming back.
I'm from Ohio. We just had to get that
well,
in.
Well, Hugh, I mean, I got to throw a jab here. I remember the national championship game against the University of Miami, you know. I mean, so I went to Florida State, went to Loyola for law school, came back to Miami, began to work, met my wife, Stephanie, who's a pharmacist in Miami, and we have two little children. And I just FaceTimed them before I got on your program because they think I'm in Tallahassee. Because anytime I leave the house, I'm in Tallahassee. Little do they know, speaking of Cy Young, we're here in the home of Cy Young in Atlanta.
Oh, now you're going to go to a Braves game on Friday night. I'm out of here on Friday. I would have joined you. But Danny Perez, your incoming national chair of ALEC. Why join ALEC? You got all sorts of stuff. I mean, we were joking before. Dwayne suggested I introduce you as Latinx, and we had a good laugh because that is just the most crazy. You called it a gift, right?
I did. I still think it's a gift. Whoever came up with that term and threw it right in our lap as a conservative movement, they gave us a gift, because that's not what I am.
That's a Republican who is working within Democratic circles. So you're going to take over. Why does ALEC matter?
Look, ALEC is the conservative movement. It is the association for all people. And it's why I really got involved in ALEC. You know, Hugh, I think a lot of people are missing that the majority of the population of the United States, sooner rather than later, is going to be a Hispanic majority.
Yep.
But the conservative movement hasn't done a good enough job. And this is across the board. This is not by association or by party. The conservative movement has not done a good job of inviting the Hispanic population into their tent. They've tried, but it hasn't been successful. Hispanics are people of family values, hardworking, morals. That is the Republican Party. And I think right now, as a young Hispanic whose family fled communism, who knows exactly when AOC talks socialism, when Bernie Sanders talks socialism, my family knows what that means. I can fight back to that message with a personal story and bring that population into the conservative movement. And I think it starts with ALEC. ALEC is the organization for that movement. And so we have begun that already, and we'll continue to move in that direction.
Now, Danny Perez, Representative Perez, soon to be Speaker Perez, when I hear people talk about, oh, they're just the Cuban Republicans. And I think to myself, you haven't talked to any Venezuelans recently. You haven't talked to any Nicaraguans recently. You haven't talked to any El Salvadorians recently. The reason that the Republican Party is increasingly ascendant among Hispanic voters is what? Why are Hispanic voters coming to Republican? I mean, the numbers are there. Democrats are scared to death.
They should be. They should be. Look, our polling in Florida is showing that it's not just the Cubans. Those are the days of old.
Right.
You're getting Nicaraguans. I mean, you have to think Central and South America, their governments are turning towards the left. So Colombia has just elected a basically socialist president.
Who had roots in terrorism.
Exactly. That's where he came from. He came from the FARC. So now you have Colombia, you have Venezuela, you have Argentina, you have Chile, you have all of these countries, and they're all going in the direction of Venezuela. And then you're looking at the United States. Overall, although right now we're on a little bit of a speed bump, I don't know if you noticed or not, overall the United States trends in the right direction, regardless of who's in power, but more so because of the process that we have, the process of government. People don't want the process of a Venezuela. They want the process of the United States. Hispanics have figured that out. They have spent a lot of time to get to this country legally, the ones that should be here legally. They get to this country, all they want is opportunity. Colombia is not giving them opportunity. They're taking it away. The United States gives us that opportunity. We just want to work. We want to be able to make a better life for our families. We want our children to grow up with opportunity. It is literally that simple. This country gives it to us. The Republican Party helps us get to where we want to go. And they're noticing that. We don't want the handouts. We don't. Just give us the opportunity to work. Don't take my taxes. Leave it in my pocket. Let me put that into education. Let me put that into clothing. I don't want to give it to the government. The government doesn't know what to do with their dollar more than I know. And the Republicans have preached that message for a long time, and the Hispanics have picked up on it.
Governor DeSantis gets all the press, and rightly so. He's a hell of a leader. Used to do this show regularly when he's in the House and had time on his hands. Doesn't do the show regularly now because he doesn't have time on the hands. Kick him on that, would you? Tell him,
I will.
But you got a good governor. You got majorities. What are you going to do about education? Because Arizona just passed this revolutionary bill. I'm going to ask every one of you, what are you going to do about getting people out of government schools if they want to go?
I think Florida is the leader in school choice. And we've been pushing the school choice movement for over a decade. We started under Governor Bush, if you recall, Hugh. But what we've done is we have continued the school choice movement and allowing voucher programs, what we call the Hope Scholarship programs. But we've given parents the opportunity to choose where they believe their child should go to school with those dollars that come from the state. But more importantly, Governor DeSantis has done a phenomenal job in the following scenario. Before he came in power, Florida was towards the bottom tier of pay for teachers. We are now number five. We're number five in starting pay for teachers in the state of Florida, and we've continued to grow, not just starting pay, but we've also given school districts the opportunity to allocate their money as they see fit for the veteran teachers. Starting pay in Miami, as I'm sure you can imagine, is a lot different than Clay County. Miami's an expensive city. So we've given that flexibility, but the funds are there, and that's because of Governor Ron DeSantis. And here at ALEC, we talk about those options. We talk about how can we make sure that school children that strive to be teachers eventually go through with their dream and don't say, I can't become a teacher because the salary is too low. We talk about that policy here at ALEC and how we can change that.
Now, it's the American Legislative Exchange Council. You are a legislator. That is what most of the framers aspired to be. They gave Article I the most power. They wanted to legislate, not execute, but to legislate. Do you like being a legislator?
I do. I love advocating. You know how we started, Hugh, is I got a call from the sitting state representative. He was terming out, and he said, hey, do you want to run for office? Hugh, between you, I, and just this little circle, I don't want to get out of our...
Just 6 million
people.
Yeah,
just 6 million people. No big deal. I think people should begin to run to office in their mid-40s because of a lack of life experience that someone has at 29. And that's when I got the call. But I was fortunate enough to take that leap of faith, and it's worked out. But here we are. I said, if someone's going to advocate for my family, my future family, because at the time I didn't even have children. I was just married. I said, well, I'd rather it be me. I grew up in this neighborhood where I live in Miami. It's where I work. It's where I live. It's where my parents live. It's where my siblings live. And so we took a leap of faith, and it was the best decision I could have made because advocating on behalf of my community, although it sounds super cheesy, it sounds terrible.
Well, let me give you a different thing, Danny Perez. Super cheesy. I've been doing this almost as long as you've been alive. I started in 1990, and you were born in 87?
Correct, yes.
So I've got a little experience on this. and I spot talent. I'm like a scout for the MLB. And so you got talent. What do you aspire to achieve? I mean, why are you in public service? What do you aspire to achieve?
Honestly, we spoke about it earlier, Hugh. I would love for the majority of the Hispanic population to be inside of the tent of the conservative movement. That would be a successful day for me. If at the end of politics, when I am gone, I can look back and I can say that I helped the conservative movement. I made families' lives better, especially in the Hispanic population. I win. I think that, you know, they would be so much better off if they bought into our beliefs. But the messaging on our behalf probably hasn't been the best.
Oh, it sucked. But it's changing.
It is changing. And, you know, Marco's our golden boy. Senator Rubio's our golden boy. You know, he came out of Miami. He was the first one that made it out. He was the first Cuban speaker. And he's done a great job. But we have to build on that.
I read his autobiography years ago in American Life. It's an amazing story. And he went to play football in the middle of nowhere. I can't even remember where he went to play football in the middle of nowhere. But he knows how to speak. You know how to speak. Alec helps you learn what to do. And I'm curious what you say to state legislators. We got a lot of people in government listening to us. What do you say to them about joining Alec or being involved in Alec?
It'll make you a better legislator. I think that's the most important part. Because what we're doing is we're sharing ideas. I just saw Speaker Gunn from Mississippi in the hallway.
He's coming in next, yeah.
I'm glad he's after me and not before me.
Yeah.
Speaker Gunn is phenomenal. I mean, he led his state in a direction that most people never even thought was possible. It was because of him that we were able to have that decision on Roe v. Wade. It was their case in Mississippi that they picked up in the Supreme Court. But it's these kinds of relationships that I'm able to learn from him on some policies that they've done that maybe we haven't that can better Florida. But I only learned those by the conversation I'm having with other legislators. So I would tell people that are listening, join Alec. And it's not just about the members. It's not just about the legislators. It's about the private enterprise as well. Because what's happening is there's advisory councils from the private market that sit with us and they say, hey, this is what I do. And these are the hurdles. This is the red tape that you have in your state. This is how you can bring more people to your state. Let me lay that out for you. And maybe we agree and maybe we don't, but at least that option is given to me, Hugh. And that happens here at Alec. So
you got my
good
friend Andy Puzner coming in a little bit. We got less than a minute left in terms of what you want to get done when you're speaker in 2 years. What's already percolating in the Danny Perez brain?
In Florida, we have a $110 billion budget. Which is almost half of New York and California, some of these left-leaning states. However, when I got into the legislature, we were at $85 billion. I think the increase in revenue is great. We always want to increase revenue. But just because we have an increase in revenue doesn't mean you want to increase expenses. The governor has done a phenomenal job of increasing our surplus fund. In Florida, we have a $15 billion surplus, and we balance our budget. Like most states, we balance our budget. So, you know, the debt that we are talking about when we're looking at some of these left-leaning states in Florida, we're lucky enough to not have that. But I would like to continue to increase that surplus for a rainy day down the future. Whoever that next Cy Young may be, in your words, whoever that future speaker may be, I want to make sure that they have the funds that are necessary.
Danny Perez, thanks for joining us from Alec. ALEC.org, America. Go to ALEC.org, then come back. I continue the parade of all-stars that Alec has lined up for me. We're going to Mississippi next and talk about what a tax cut can do for you. You ought to be talking in your state right now to your state legislators about getting your taxes cut. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
America, Hugh Hewitt from ALEC.org conference in Atlanta, joined by Speaker Phil Gunn. Now, Speaker Phil Gunn has some disabilities. He went to Baylor and Ole Miss for law school, so he doesn't know much about football. Nothing about football, actually. It's all that. I'm sorry, Speaker.
Well, you will recall Baylor and Ole Miss played each other in the Sugar Bowl last year.
Well, no, I actually, I just follow Ohio State because I only follow the winners.
I went and I sat quietly and I watched. And
I was going to say, that's a kind of a conflict, isn't it?
It is.
I went to law school at Michigan, and I still root against them every year. Speaker Gunn, you just did an amazing thing. You cut taxes in Mississippi. We're talking about all sorts of things with ALEC people. Tell us about Mississippi tax cuts.
Well, we started with the premise that putting money back in the pockets of the taxpayers is a good thing. And I honestly don't see how anybody who's a conservative could disagree with that concept. When you let people keep more of their hard-earned money, they have a better ability to provide for themselves, improve their quality of life, take care of their children, give more to their church. Those dollars turn over in the community. The businesses prosper. There's just no downside to letting people keep more of their hard-earned money. And so I had this passion to eliminate our income tax. We have a
Bravo.
Well, thank you.
Virginia Governor Youngkin, listen to this.
We started on this plan to eliminate the income tax. We didn't quite get all the way there. But if anybody who follows politics and legislation, you know, you get the best deal you can get and then live to fight another day. We were able to move to a flat tax and eliminate basically about a third of the personal income tax.
This is why red states are getting businesses and people. It's why California is losing high income.
They're going
to Tennessee and Florida and now Mississippi.
Yeah.
They're going to Texas and Arizona, which just had a flat tax of 2.5%.
That is correct.
It is the future of the country. People do not want to give more of their money to the state government.
And the situation we found ourselves in this year, let me make kind of a side comment here. I was disappointed to find that my struggle wasn't from necessarily the other party, but it was with people within my own party who were nervous about relinquishing dollars, tax dollars, because we might need it to spend on stuff. And when we looked at our revenues for last year, we had done the budget, we'd given a teacher pay raise, we'd filled the rainy day fund, we had fixed the pension system, and we still had $800 million left over. And my argument, my challenge, as I said, was within my own party. So some of those people that I was arguing with, I said, look, guys, we have spent money on everything we can think to spend on, and we still have $800 million left.
Yeah, money is not the problem.
It is time to give that money back to the taxpayers.
Are voters appreciative, Philip Gunn?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And they are going to reap the benefits of this as we move forward.
You know, last
it's
night,
a third. They basically keep a third of their income tax that they were sending to the state of Mississippi. They now get to keep in their pocket.
That's real money.
And that for some, it's going to improve. I mean, it's another bag of groceries a month. It's another utility bill. I started to say it's another tank of gasoline, but
well,
maybe a half a tank of gasoline. But you understand, this is it's another pair of shoes for their kids. I mean, they can take these dollars and improve their quality of life.
As someone with five grandchildren, I know what young parents do, and the money goes.
It does.
Now, in London last night, I'm going to connect Mississippi and the United Kingdom. Rishi Sunak changed his appeal to the Tory Conservatives. He adopted the tax cut agenda that Liz Truss had been running on. Too late.
Right.
Conservatives want tax cuts because they think government's too damn big. I mean, everywhere at every level, every state, it's just too big. Who pushed back the hardest against the flat tax in Mississippi?
Well, as I said, you had those Democrats who were on the other side, obviously, who were very nervous about, keep in mind, Mississippi's the poorest state in the country. So there's a demand for a lot of different things, and government is supposed to step up, and government is supposed to solve all the problems, which is not what we as conservatives believe.
No, it's not.
I've said it often. Now, not every problem requires a government solution. But there are those who want to keep every tax dollar we can get and spend it. And sadly, they had some within my own party who adopted that mindset. And it was a challenge to get them on board to say, you know, we are spending, as I said, we are spending every dollar, everything we can come up with, and we still have a bunch of money left over. So
Speaker,
the challenge was we give them back the $800 million, or we invent and come up with new ways to spend this money, which is not what we as conservatives should do.
The greatest social service agency in America is the American church. They do more for more people, and you said something you can give more to your church with tax money. Yes, you can. And people on the left don't get that. But people on the right understand, well, I tithe or I do this or I do that and I support. Right. And that's just brilliant. Is it spreading? And will you tackle education next? We have a minute. Will you free kids from public schools?
We have tried to do that as well. We passed a charter school bill when I first became speaker. The first year I became speaker, we decided we were going to push forward some school choice options. Ended up being the longest debate in the history of the Mississippi House of Representatives. Over 12 hours, we debated whether or not we should give school choice options to children. So it's become a real challenge. But, yeah, we are trying. I will brag on our state. We've seen tremendous education improvements over the last 5 or 6 years in Mississippi.
Speaker Philip Gunn, thank you. Congratulations. Keep leading on. You're not term limited. Keep your state doing innovative things. And I hope you catch some Big Ten football and learn what it's all
about. Thank you, sir.
I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show from the ALEC.org conference in Atlanta. Stay with us. Glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt, live in Atlanta from the American Legislative Exchange Council annual meeting, ALEC.org, to you if you are listening. And if you have been listening, you've been finding out that this is a wonderful place for people who care about the future of the country. And we are in Georgia, of course, and I have a Georgia state rep with us, John Carson, District 46. John is here to welcome us, but he doesn't have to tell us about one place, John. At 11 today, Generalissimo and I are headed to the varsity because we're in Georgia, we're in Atlanta, we got to go to the varsity.
You got to go to the varsity. Well, get your tums ready.
Yeah, I know. Get you. Well, I'm ready. I've done that before. My buddy Glenn. And then tomorrow night we'll eat at a different place. But I'm mostly here at ALEC doing what ALEC does. Tell us about the Georgia State Legislature. And you guys got a lot of, you made it easy to vote and hard to cheat. Everyone said, left said you were voting surprised. You had the biggest turnout ever. I mean, it was just amazing
what you guys just did. Yeah, it really was. And again, thank you, Hugh, for having me on and so forth. And it's a pleasure welcoming the whole annual meeting down here. I really believe, and to your point, yes, I'm a Georgia State Representative, represent part of Cobb and Cherokee County. I've been in the legislature for 11 years. To your point, and I would just say, in addition to the election integrity law that we passed in 21 and what have you, we are really at the epicenter of politics and both culturally as well as geographically here in Georgia. You know, there was so much focus on the 2020 election and things that we needed to tidy up and clean up in regard to voter integrity. And we got a lot of flack for it. But you need voter ID for so many different things. I mean, you need ID for so many different things. Renting a car, leasing an apartment, getting a job, you should have ID to vote.
Now,
that should be basic common sense. But culturally, for some reason, that's a no starter for
ask
some
and answer. People, the verdict is in. I want to talk about Georgia for a second because there's a problem.
Yeah.
With Georgia, aside from having stolen Ohio State's place in the national playoffs last year on your mark. But we got Nick Chubb, by the way, up at the Browns. So
okay,
I'm very happy
enough
with Georgia. Now, the problem is the young talent in America is coming here. My son's, one of his very closest friend, an actor, moved from New York City down here because the film business is coming to Atlanta.
Yeah.
One of my very best friend, Robert C. O'Brien, former national security advisor, his son-in-law moved to Atlanta to work for an Atlanta law firm. Because big law is coming here. Mm-hmm. People are moving to Georgia from all over the place. And I'm just worried that Georgia's out-competing everyone that's not named Florida, Tennessee, or Arizona.
Atlanta, I'm an Atlanta native, by the way, Hugh. I don't know if I told you that or not. Atlanta was formed back in the mid-1800s way at the early part of Atlanta being formed. It was called Marthasville. It became the name Atlanta because of the crossroads of the railroads, of all the railroads taking cotton from Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia all the way to the coast, all the way to Charleston and so forth. And ever since then, we've been an industrial hub, a financial hub, so many of the crossroads, not just of the old economy, but of the new economy as well. You mentioned the film industry. We have a booming film industry here in Georgia. About $9 billion with a B.
You were explaining to me. You're in the tax credit for film business.
I am. And so I recuse myself on all those votes. We also have a huge fintech business, financial
technology. But pause on film for a moment because we're Californians.
At least
I used to be. And you've taken the whole film industry.
No,
how did that happen?
Taken the whole film
what
industry.
Did Georgia do?
Georgia offers a tax credit for qualified, what we call qualified expenditures or QEs. So if Disney, for example, if they come into Georgia and they spend $100 million on filming Jungle Cruise, it was in the movie theaters about 2 years ago. If they spend $100 million, they get a 30% per Georgia statute. They get a 30% of that in the way of tax credits. They can take that and offset their tax liability here in Georgia, or they can use that and basically monetize it, and they can put more money back into Georgia production.
If you're listening, California.
That wipes out California.
Yeah, why is that? And Canada, by the way, did the same thing. This is, you just got their first mover advantage, right?
Right, right. And so it's just been a total game changer. You have billions of dollars of a real estate investment. I would tell you this, you cannot lease stage space here in Georgia through the rest of 22.
Wow. Okay, what else is Georgia doing that's innovative? Because I think Brian Kemp's a hell of a governor.
He is a fantastic governor. And I would just add that he received, I think, about 76% of the primary vote. Yeah. It was just a landslide election victory. What other things Georgia's doing right? We have a real booming fintech industry, financial technology. So, you know, your credit card transactions, so many of them are processed through Atlanta or the metropolitan Atlanta. You mentioned the law firms and legal accounting.
It's all
there's a huge, huge professional presence here in Georgia, not just in law firms, but amongst a whole array of financial, actuarial, accounting, legal, and so forth.
I tell people, if they go to Emory Law School, not only will they deal with Rich Freer, who was my summer associate director back in the good old days at Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, they will get the greatest law, and they will get employed if they go to Emory Law School.
Absolutely. Very, very low unemployment here in Atlanta.
What is housing doing now? Is housing gone through the roof?
You can barely find housing, particularly in the suburbs where I live. Now, you can find, because of COVID, you can be able to find a little bit more options here in the downtown area, in the midtown area. But it's still, rents are strong and home prices just continue to go through the roof despite the increase in interest rates, which is going to be announced, today, I think?
Tomorrow? Yeah, they're going to have 3/4 of a point. Now, Representative, tell us a little bit about crime in Atlanta. The only story I ever seen to see that's negative is that someone gets mugged in an Atlanta park. Yeah. What's going on here?
I think there's just a number of factors going on. Number one, people were tired and cooped up for a number of months, if not years, after the whole COVID thing. Number two, we've had, unfortunately, a lot of racial unrest. Number three, the morale on the city of Atlanta Police Department is probably at an all-time low. I would have to defer to some of my friends in public safety in the legislature, as well as professionally in public safety, but morale is at near all-time low because of pay, because the district attorney is not supporting them. The mayor in the past has not supported them.
Is it a Soros district attorney?
I do not know.
So, Representative Carson, in terms of ALEC, when crime comes up, what do the ALEC people talk about? I mean, the American Legislative Exchange Council I know they know education taxes. What do they recommend on crime?
That's not outside my area of expertise, but I think one of the things they don't want to see is this no cash bail.
I was hoping you'd say that. I'm not.
That is just an absolute. It's just you're asking for repeat offenders. You're just plain asking for it, and that's the biggest non-starter.
So, what is the agenda ahead in Georgia? By the way, I just luxuriate in ALEC because I can walk out with people who actually do the business of legislating.
Right.
Why do you come here? What are you learning about this year?
Let me tell you what I'm passionate about. And what I'm passionate about are low taxes. And then probably before that is school choice. I think if we have school choice, if every parent and every child is empowered to go to the school that best fits them, whether it's public or private. And keep in mind, I'm an Atlanta native. I went through 18 years of Georgia public education. But public education is not the same as it was 35 years ago or what have you. If every child is empowered to meet the educational needs that for which they need to meet their educational needs, that is true.
Did you see what Arizona did?
It's about educational freedom was what it is. Yeah. Arizona basically allowed, was it $7,000 per child vouchers?
Yeah, they went the full Monty.
Yeah.
They just said, here is your check. Go find your school.
Yeah. So we have a program in Georgia, a tax credit scholarship program. it's qualified education expense is what we call it. The largest SSO is Georgia Gold, so it's affectionately called the Georgia Gold program. I had legislation to increase that from $58 million to $100 million in 2018. Last year, or no, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, we increased it to $120 million.
Bravo.
And I would love to do more because the need is there.
And the Republicans have the first mover advantage here. Parents
absolutely
want out of these schools that have failed. They don't want to be politicized. They do not want to teach divisive issues. They want education. They want learn to read from 1 to 3, read to learn from 3 to 12. And
absolutely.
All my kids went to public school. I'm a Catholic school kid, but all my kids went to public school. And I am hoping Alec just spends all tax cuts and school choice. That's
you know, what I tell you, the way Donald Trump didn't get as many votes in Georgia as he could have was the suburban moms. Hugh, the way we're going to win them back is that we're going to earn them back. And the way we're going to do it is two things, school safety and public safety, as well as school choice. Because they might not like this and that, whatever, but they will vote for their children.
From your lips to every legislator's ears. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Hugh.
I'll be right back from Atlanta. Home of a passingly noticeable football program. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. Nick Chubb, we love you. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt from the ALEC Gathering, the American Legislative Exchange Council in Atlanta. My next guest is John Wills in the Iowa State House. I should call him Sergeant Wills. Maybe First Sergeant Wills. I mean, how many years did you put in, Sergeant?
I put 25 years in.
Thank you for that. Now, you were on the Army side of that, so go Navy, beat Army. I told you I'd say that. And you're from Iowa, and they don't have Big Ten football there anymore. I know that the Hawkeyes were ranked number one for a while last year. That was like the Doug Lamorese, who's a frequent guest on this show, always said, that's a fake number one. And he was right. It fell apart.
They always, they're a great football team, great history, but they always seem like they're going to just get to the edge, and then they kind of fall back.
Well, Ohio State is my passion in college football. So I was listening to the Buckeye Talk podcast yesterday, and they were predicting Iowa's record and Iowa State's record. And Iowa's, they're projecting at 4-5, I think Doug said, in the Big Ten. Because you haven't got a quarterback. You got these great two all-American defensive players. So Iowa has this great – why can't you get a quarterback from Iowa?
You know, I don't know. The weather may have something to do about it. Those all-stars want to just go in some of those warm weather states or a little bit more moderate weather.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that you may not be able to get quarterback, but you get presidential candidates. And you just told me something I didn't know, that I have two affiliates in Northwest Iowa, which is the heartland for the Republican primary, and you're a listener. So thank you for listening.
You bet. Just really enjoy the show and listen just about every morning.
Now, you're up early then. Because it's on early in Iowa.
Right. 8 o'clock is, earlier than that, 8 o'clock is when I usually start listening.
Well, I appreciate it. Now, John, how long have you been in the State House?
This is my eighth year.
And why would a sergeant who had fought the wars, and you were deployed to both Afghanistan and Iraq, let me pause. When Afghanistan collapsed a year ago next month, what did you think?
I was stunned. It was a crime. What happened that we pulled out like that, that we left Americans. I was stunned that we would do that because our military is the greatest in the world, and we could have easily secured that country long enough to get our people out, take our equipment out, or destroy the equipment. I was taught from day one in the military that you do not leave your equipment standing there. No matter what it is, we know how to destroy our own equipment. You get rid of it or you take it out. You don't leave it there for the enemy.
$8 billion of stuff in the hands of the Taliban. All right, I digress. Iowa just passed a flat tax. Let's talk about something good. Iowa has decided it's going to compete with Tennessee and Florida and Georgia and Texas. How hard was it to get your Democratic buddies in Iowa to pass a flat tax?
Very difficult. We only had two Democrats come on board.
Out of their minds?
Yeah. I don't understand it. We have, you know, this whole thing started about 10 years ago when we started doing fiscally conservative budgeting, and we got ourselves to a point now where we have a $1 billion surplus this year, another $1 billion next year. And so what are we going to do with the money? Well, a lot of them wanted to just spend it or create new programs and that sort of thing. And so we said, no, we're going to reduce our taxes in half, at least in half. And we got rid of retirement tax. We got rid of, we went from 12% corporate tax to 5.8% corporate tax. We just did all of this stuff, and our budget, our revenue is still coming in like you cannot believe.
Because people want, I was a wonderful place to live. I have, Danny is a friend of mine at Chapman Law School, Danny Bogard, who taught at Drake Law School for a long time. Iowa is a wonderful place to live. And, you know, winters aren't that bad. If you're from Ohio, it's just another Midwestern winter.
Yeah.
People get that. I am curious, though, when you live in Iowa and you're a state representative, like you have been for how many years?
8 years.
8 years. Okay, so you probably already had Pompeo stay in your bunkhouse. I mean, you probably had Tom Cotton for dinner at the house. You know, Mike Pence probably calls you up every day. And Nikki Haley and Tim Scott and Rick Scott and the former president, they probably all know John Wilson's on speed dial. What's it like to be a state legislator in Iowa as a presidential race is getting underway? Are people just coming over for dinner unannounced?
Well, it's really interesting because the last 4 years we had the caucus coming up, and I wasn't used to this, where these presidential candidates would just all of a sudden I'd get a phone call and it was
Wisconsin. So no name, no ID.
Florida, you know, and so I'm like, what's going on here? You know, it was just amazing. But yeah, they all wanted to come to my district and talk to my people and understand what's going on in Northwest Iowa. And it was just amazing.
Because Northwest Iowa is the epicenter of the Republican Party, right? It's like the most Republican part of a Republican state.
Yes, my district right now is the third most conservative district in the entire state, and we're very proud of that. And we don't give our vote to somebody unless we shake their hand and say hi and what's your issue. So we always,
have you seen any of the 2024ers yet? There, have you seen them? Pompeo's there a lot.
All the ones you mentioned, we've seen.
Tom's there a lot. Cotton's there a lot.
Tom Cotton, Nikki Haley, Pompeo. Those three have been there the most.
You know, I am openly advocating to moderate every single debate because they're all my friends. I'm in Switzerland. And last time I was in Iowa was for the 2016 Iowa caucus. And I was amazed at how much Iowans are very smart about politics. You folks know what you're doing and you demand a lot of candidates. I don't ever want it to change for that reason.
Right. I think it's the best thing. I mean, a lot of people don't understand caucuses, but I think it's the greatest thing. It's basically a bunch of your neighbors get together and you sit down and you talk about politics and you talk about the issues and the candidates. We have at the state fair, we have something called the soapbox.
Yep.
And so candidates go to the soapbox and they talk for a half hour and crowds will just gather around the soapbox and listen. And it's just awesome.
We're on right now in Minnesota, AM 1280, The Patriot. Dwayne and I used to go to the Minnesota State Fair until our buddy exiled us, you know, who exiled us?
Jay Larson.
Jay Larson threw us out of Minnesota. It's his fault. I hope he's listening. So Minnesota says they have the largest state fair. Are they right?
No.
No.
Iowa is the largest and greatest state fair in the nation, probably the world.
So the legislature only meets 3 months out of the year. How do you get anything done?
Well, I think it's great. If we were there longer, we'd do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And so we can get in and get out and with relatively little damage to our state. And that's why we've got such a great state.
All right. Now, in terms of, since you're a veteran, I'm going to ask you something that's not on the agenda. Veteran need help, especially military family spouses. I'm sure your spouse had to deal with your being deployed. How many times were you deployed, Sergeant?
Three times.
And so I don't know how old your kids were, if you had kids or anything like that, but military families have a difficult road. Which unit were you with that you were in Iowa? Is it National Guard?
So I was in Nebraska National Guard, Iowa National Guard, active duty. So I did all three.
So how can states support military families and how ought they to do so?
Well, really, one of the things that I'm I think is pretty important is suicide rates. The suicide rates for veterans is so high. 22 veterans a day commit suicide or attempt suicide. And so I think that we really need to be cognizant of the fact that these folks, sometimes their mental health isn't the greatest. Sometimes they just need some help. They need some helping hand. And it doesn't take the government to do that. I think just us as individuals can reach out to our veterans. We know who they are and just say, hey, you all right?
Yeah. Invisible wounds is a big deal. I do the Semper Fi and America's Fun show twice a year, and invisible wounds matter a lot. So suicide prevention. How about licensure? Because, you know, a lot of military spouses are licensed as PAs and they move around the states and they can't practice.
We have done some great things in Iowa where if you're a military spouse and you're moving to Iowa, we're going to give you some time to work in your job and then get licensed in the state of Iowa. So you can still work. You're getting licensed for our state. And we're going to try to even make it even smoother where we're just going to take that other state's license. And I think we can get there.
That's the best. Now, talk to me about school choice in Iowa. I don't know where you are. I don't know what the legislature thinks.
it was my bill to run this year in the House. We weren't able to get it passed. So really, Iowans are passionate about school. We've got great schools, and so Iowans are passionate about it. And a lot of House members, a lot of Republicans in the House, they just want to make sure we get it right. They don't want to hurt the schools. They don't want to hurt what we've got as a good thing. But at the same time, I think we're going to come back at it next year and do it.
You know, Iowa is a pro-life state. And we had the Mississippi speaker on who said in Mississippi, they've upped the tax credit, a tax credit, not a tax for crisis pregnancy centers. And yes. So Dobbs has happened. There will be fewer abortions in the United States, thank God. Mm-hmm. But there will be more babies, and they have to be taken care of, and sometimes moms can't do that. And so what is Iowa doing on the pregnancy crisis center front?
So we have increased the adoption tax credit. So we've given some extra help for people who want to adopt. But I think we need to do more. We need to have more crisis pregnancy centers. We need to have more assistance for these moms. One of the things that I heard yesterday while I was at this meeting was a state who says you gotta call this phone number before you have an abortion, and that phone number basically just says here is all the help that you can receive if you carry this baby through term. And after people hear that, they don't have an abortion because they know that there's some help out there for them. And so I think that we need to really look at some.
And
of
you heard
things.
That in an ALEC meeting.
Yes,
that's why you come.
I come because I believe in the concepts that Alex believes in, you know, federalism, limited government, less regulation. Those are the things that really I believe. They're my firm values.
How did you become a conservative, Sergeant? I mean, you're busy serving your country in uniform and in war zone. How did you become a conservative?
I can't place my finger on that. It's ever since I remember, that's what I was. You know, I just always feel like the government just needs to stay out of our way. And it has a purpose. There's a reason for government. It has to be there. But for the most part, when the government gets involved, things start getting messed up.
Now, I got to ask you about farming because you're from an agriculture state.
Yep.
Federal government has really screwed up farming over the course of 40 years. What are the farmers doing in Iowa right now? Are they struggling?
Right now, we have been on a really good period because the corn prices have been up and really trade's been good. The Ukraine war kind of worries me a little bit.
Oh, that does increase demand for American agricultural product, doesn't it?
It should, yes. But there's a lot of repercussions. You know, when Brazil has good crops, then our prices go down. So it's a worldwide market right now. And so we really have to be cognizant of that fact. But the government, you know, we really see a lot of things where farmers have to do crazy things because that's what the government
says. Tax structure, especially as people get close to passing their farms on their kids. Last question. Iowa went from a blue state to red state. One of my buddies worked for Berkeley Bedell, who used to be like the liberal giant of the House of Representatives, and it was pretty blue state. It's red state now. What happened?
Well, I think people are starting to see the light. What it comes down to is our policies work. Our conservative policies work, and people see that, and they look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now, where instead of dealing with the important issues, we're dealing with Is a woman really a woman, or is she a man? Or we're dealing with these social things that really the average person.
Did Iowa take action on that bill? Did they protect girls' sports?
We did. We protected girls' sports from as young as we have sports to NCAA, and we're very proud of that. Because
I think it's an 80-20 issue. Do you agree with me?
I would say even more. We need to protect girls' sports. They fought so hard in the 70s to get Title IX. And once they got it, now all of a sudden we're potentially going to go backwards again.
Yeah. Richard Nixon signed it 50 years ago last May.
Yeah.
50 years of women equality in sports, and it's under assault. John Wills, thank you, my friend. And good luck in having some football teams come out of Iowa. It's a long shot. It's a long shot. But thank you for joining me. Coming back with the final segment from day one of my ALEC special broadcast. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt from Atlanta, where ALEC is meeting, American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC.org, ALEC.org for you Steelers fans. I'm joined by North Carolina State House Representative Jason Sain. And before I talk politics, I just got to ask him, because he's a UNC grad, And I just don't you feel a little bit bad about taking Coach K out with an L? Don't you feel a little bit bad?
Not that bad. I'm a UNC Charlotte grad, for the record. However, huge Tar Heel fan. And no, we don't feel bad about that at all. It was quite nice.
I've got Russ and Aaron are my in-laws, and they live down there in North Carolina in Winston-Salem. And they have a divided house. And I just said, everyone should want Coach K to win his last game. And all the UNC people, Charlotte or Chapel Hill, they all say, no.
Look, we appreciate Coach K for what he accomplished. Incredible coach. But you know what? It was kind of, as a Carolina fan, it was okay.
Jason Say, tell us about what you're up to in the North Carolina State House and why you come to ALEC.
Yeah, so I came to ALEC very, very early in my legislative career. I was appointed and got appointed in September. And by December, I went to my first ALEC and was just blown away. I found a room full of conservatives who think like I do, had innovative ideas, wanted to change their states for the better. And I love ALEC because it really is about sharing ideas. It is an exchange. And I learned so much. I was our finance chairman for 4 years. We've done tax reform over the last decade in North Carolina. We have changed the trajectory of our state. Once our party took over and legislators that go and assemble at ALEC have been a big part of changing the direction of our state. And it's been incredible. We're number two in rich states, poor states now. We were at the bottom when I first joined. ALEC. And so
Rich States, Poor States is the annual report from ALEC on who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong.
Correct. And Utah's always number one because they do it so well, but they give you a target to go after. And for us, we've hovered at 5 and 4. And now we're at number two. And so Utah, we're coming. But what it really means for people that I serve, people all across the state, is that they live in a much better place. They've got a better tax environment. They've got a better regulatory environment, which means that jobs happen. People get to go to work. They get to be gainfully employed. I've got a 14-year-old son. My wife and I want the best for him. We feel like one of the best things we can do for him is make sure that he's got opportunity. And that's what our state really has for folks. And that's why we're taking business.
Now, what are you doing about the fact everyone wants to move to North Carolina?
Sure.
Mel Spies, if you're listening, I know that you're at Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida.
Yeah.
And some people are going to Texas and Arizona because low tax, good business,
sure,
et cetera. But your houses, I went down on vacation in Wilmington at the island off of Wilmington, and I said, wow, this is great. I looked at the house price and said, oh, my gosh, yeah. My eyes rolled back in my head. What are you going to do about homeowners, young people who need to buy a house?
Well, I mean, that's part of it is that you've got to provide opportunity for everybody, right? So at best we can, it's not a regulatory answer to that.
No, it's not.
It's actually less regulation.
Yes, it is.
The market will, you know, figure itself out.
It'll build more houses if you let them.
If you let them. And we are growing. And you know, people are coming in. Young people are coming into towns like Charlotte and Asheville and Raleigh, and they're loving it. There's tons of opportunity there. And, of course, I spend half my time in Raleigh because that's where the capital is. And I watch that city grow and grow and grow, and the construction and the cranes. So we're building as fast as we can.
You know, my prom date. And one of my closest friends who I saw a couple of weeks ago, Patty Ganeri, she lives in what I call Hog Holler Hollow because it's way up in the hills, way up in the western part of North Carolina.
Right.
It has a name. I don't use it, but Hog Holler Hollow. And she just loves it up there.
Yeah.
And so the western part of your state is competing with the rest of the country.
Oh, it's God's country. So I'm to the west of Charlotte, my district. And we're about 30 minutes from downtown Charlotte. But the mountains of North Carolina are beautiful. We've got the coast. We've got everything that California has, except not as many fruits and nuts.
Let me talk to you. But you know what you got? You know what you got that's the best thing?
What's
you
that?
Got Baker. You got Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
I don't know
if
you're
a
Panthers guy.
Yeah.
But I'm a Baker. You know, I'm still a Browns fan, diehard, 4 on the 50. I'm not leaving the franchise no matter what happens.
Sure.
But I'm going to root for the Panthers this year. What do you think about Baker?
Well, one, we in desperate need, right? We've got great personnel, but it just can't put it all together. Cam Newton was not the answer when we brought him back.
Sam Darnold wasn't the answer.
No. And so I think Baker really does show some incredible promise for our team. Very excited about this season.
You know, he's a college football player in a professional league. He's got the passion of a college player.
Yeah.
And that may be why it didn't always work. But he did get almost to the AFC Championship game, except for a bad call. I'm talking to you, NFL refs, against Kansas City 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So you've got a potential playoff run going on there.
Potential playoff run and someone we can build, multiple successful years off of. I mean, I think, you know, he's got that kind of promise. And, you know, as long as we keep the right personnel around him, I think, you know, the Panthers are going to do very well.
And is the state legislature going to continue to stay red?
It is. We actually in the House, we're three votes shy of a supermajority right now, we're so close. We think that we're going to get somewhere around 76, as high as possibly 80 members. For context, 73 or 72 is a supermajority. So anything above that, if we get to 80 Republican legislators in the House, we believe we'll win a supermajority in the Senate too. We'll be red for a long time.
And you can roll over the governor's veto then.
We can.
And absolutely. You can do school choice. You can do tax reform.
Absolutely.
Oh, God bless you, Jason Tsang. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, America, for listening. Thank you, Generalissimo, for producing. For everyone from the American Legislative Exchange Council, I'll be back tomorrow and Friday because this is where it happens. It happens in state legislatures, and I want you to know about it. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for listening.
The Hugh Hewitt Show is now available on TV. Go to SalemNewsChannel.com or download the app. You can also watch on Roku and Fire Stick. Salem News Channel, the antidote to the mainstream media.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.